And I think there's always room, always, always, always room for an organization who can truly understand the people they're trying to reach and create content to reach them accordingly.
Welcome to the Inbound Buzz Podcast, your weekly jolt of all things digital and inbound marketing, brought to you by redpandas.com.au. Now for your host and co-founder of Red Pandas, Moby Sadiq.
Welcome to Inbound Buzz. I am your host, Moby Sadiq, and this week I bring to you a very special interview episode. Now, he may not be in love with the nickname, but to me, he is the godfather of inbound marketing and the biggest guest we've ever had on the show. So without further ado, let's jump straight into it and learn a thing or two from David Meerman Scott.
How does it feel to be called the godfather of inbound marketing?
The godfather of inbound marketing. You know, it's interesting, the whole semantic thing is, I called it the new rules of marketing and PR with the book I wrote that came out in 2007. Back in 2005, I wrote a book that's, it's very dated now because I never updated it, but it's called Cashing In With Content. So the semantics aspect is, what is this? What is this? Is it new marketing? Is it inbound marketing? Is it content marketing? There's lots of different words. And I think it's, I'm proud of the fact that I identified these concepts way before other people did and wrote about them way before other people did, along with HubSpot. Both of us, we were sort of in parallel tracks, which I'm really excited about. I don't know about the word godfather, but I'm glad.
I think it's pretty.
I'm glad that I was early.
Just on the book, because I don't think it is possible to chat to you without referring to the new rules of marketing PR book that you spoke about. And like you're saying, when this first came out, you were one of the first. Now it's commonplace, but you're one of the first people to speak about content as a form of marketing.
Yeah, when that book came out, it was the first book that did well to talk about content as a form of marketing. But I was talking about it going back to 2002. I've been talking about it for a long time. And at that time, it was incredibly radical for people to talk about marketing is now content on the web. Back in 05, 06, 07, that was incredibly radical. And I used to have countless traditional public relations people, traditional marketing people, who would fight me on it. You know, there's like, no way, this isn't going to happen. And marketing people at companies would fight me on it. And it was not obvious back then. And this was kind of an outlier of a strategy. And I saw the potential for it because I came out of the real-time news business. My first job was on a bond trading desk, and then I worked in the real-time news business. So I had an unfair advantage that when I started to talk about these ideas in 02, 03, 04, I already had 10 years experience with real-time content because I was working for companies like Dow Jones and Reuters. And so that was an unfair advantage. And I think there are very few people on the planet that could have written a book like that. And I was just lucky that, I shouldn't say lucky, I'm glad I persevered to write it because it was a non-obvious thing to do.
Well, we're glad you did too, because now the authority on marketing, as that book is commonly known as, almost 10 years later, 5 versions in its 5th rendition now at the moment.
And I just signed a deal for the 6th.
Yeah. And I think you're doing them 2 yearly cycles, is that what's
happening? It's every other year. Typically. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether that's going to always continue. The main reason why I update it, two main reasons why I update it every other year. One, of course, things change, right? The biggest thing to me that's changed in the last couple of months, for example, is Facebook Live. And the live streaming video on Facebook is really interesting from a marketing perspective. So I've always got to update the new tools. The strategy hasn't changed since 2007. Strategies are always the same. What changes are the tools. But the second reason I need to keep updating it is because the book is used in hundreds of universities around the world as a core text or as a supplemental text. And therefore, I need to make sure the book is always current so that the professors continue to use that as a core book for the students. So they first thing they do is look at the copyright. So so that's why I'm updating it every 2 years. So it's going into the sixth edition. The other thing that's really cool about it is that it's in 26 different languages. So when there's a new edition, typically there'll be some languages that it's already been published in, you know, German, Italian, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese. Some of them will then want to redo the book and republish it in the new edition. Not always, but it's kind of cool. I have a library with all the different editions of the book, different languages and different versions, and it's pretty cool.
Nice.
One book actually turns into, I think if I count them all up, there's probably 40 or 50 different editions in different languages, different editions and whatnot. It's kind of cool.
That takes repurposing to a whole new level.
It's kind of neat.
Apart from the ultimate I told you so, everyone, you're right, a lot of things are changing, but what are the core one or two fundamentals that haven't changed, and why this book still stands the test of time and you can keep doing so?
Well, a couple of things. So a core aspect of the book, which is very important to all of marketing, is this concept of buyer personas. The concept that most people's marketing fail, most companies' marketing fails, because they focus too much on their company's products and services. And if you understand your buyer personas, or the groups of people that you're trying to reach, and then you create content especially for those buyer personas, it gets you out of the trap of only writing about your company's products and services. So that's fundamental, that's core to marketing, and that hasn't changed, and that is extremely important, and not very many people actually do it. The second thing is that once you do know your buyer personas, once you do understand who you're trying to reach, then you need to create the sort of content that will attract them. And, you know, it's video and audio, and we're doing a podcast right now. You're creating content right now, right? It's text-based information, photographs, images, infographics, things like that. And then the third main concept is that you need to engage with your market instantly, in real time, and be agile. And that's actually something that's only been in the last 4 or 5 editions. It was not in the first edition. Because social networking didn't exist in the first edition. I mean, Facebook, at the time I was writing the first edition, Facebook was only for students. Twitter didn't exist. So there wasn't really this concept of real-time marketing that there is now. And so that's the other core principle that hasn't changed since I first wrote about it, I think was probably the second edition. That has not changed. And the idea that you understand your buyers, number one, you create great content that will reach them, number two, and number three, you engage instantly and in real time, that's done. That's your marketing plan right there.
Mm, absolutely. This, I think, is a really good segue to a question I had earlier, but I'll ask now, the concept of real-time marketing. So this year you spoke at the Digital Signs Expo, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You spoke about real-time marketing there. And I like that in an offline sense, sort of online sense.
Yeah, it's interesting that there is real-time outside of the online sense. And digital signage is actually a really interesting example of that. So digital signage is just, you see these signs all over the place now, but it can be a digital billboard, you know, a big version. It can be just a small digital signage, like in a restaurant or in a shopping mall or whatever it might be. And once you have a digital sign, it's possible that that digital sign can be updated instantly in real time. And it's very interesting to be able to tie a physical offline marketing initiative to instant communications because that sign can be updated instantly. So it was cool to be able to speak at that event because it's a rare example that offline marketing can actually be real time.
One thing I really like, and I think a lot of people really enjoy about your books and your presentations, is you do it via a lot of storytelling.
Mm.
I think that's one of the things that carries across with the new renditions of the book. And one that I really, really liked was the one about the CEO of Eloqua. I think he wrote a million-dollar blog post because, who was it? It was
His name
Oracle.
Is Joe Payne.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and because Oracle acquired one of his competitors. And so he wrote about it right away, instantly, in a couple of hours after the announcement was made. And he generated $1 million worth of new business. And then his company was also acquired by Oracle. And I calculated that the value of that $1 million of extra revenue was worth $15 million on the purchase price, which means it was a $16 million blog post. So I call that my $16 million newsjacking blog post.
It's gone from million to 16 now when you think about it. The concept of real-time marketing, you speak a little bit about the mindset. I'd love if you could elaborate on that a little bit now. What should a brand do if they have no idea where to start? How do they adopt the mindset? How should they commence the adoption of real-time marketing?
So real-time marketing is just the understanding that things are happening right now, this second, and you need to be prepared to take advantage of situations or be prepared to respond to situations that could potentially be negative to your company. However, most organizations plan their marketing way ahead of time, and they execute on a plan. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the problem is if you're only creating content for the future and you're only executing on a marketing plan that you created in the past, then you're not focused on real time. So what you need to do is just understand what's going on in the news, what's going on in the social networks, what are people saying about you or not saying about you, what are they saying about your competitors, what are the things that are going on out there, and then be prepared to act when the moment is right. And that's not something that most marketers are familiar with. Most marketers are prepared to do. So I actually consider it to be very similar to an exercise program. In other words, if you want to get fit and healthy and develop an exercise program, number one, you need to understand how to do that. So you have to build knowledge. The second thing is that you need to have a mindset shift, that you're going to change the way you eat and you're going to change the way you move your body. And that mindset shift is essential to be able to become fit and healthy. You can't just dabble and say, I'll eat one less piece of pizza this week. Or, I might go out and jog for a mile next Tuesday. And, you can't dabble with it. You have to make it a mindset shift. And I think the same thing is true about this concept of real-time communications. As number one, you need to educate yourself about what it is so you understand how it works. It's very much like an exercise program. Educate yourself on how to eat healthy and to exercise. And then the second thing is then you have to commit to it. You have to make a mindset shift. You have to say, I'm going to run my business in a real-time manner. And that's a challenge for a lot of organizations, but that's what's required. Mm. And if you do that, then when there's an opportunity, like, for example, in the case of Eloqua, their competitor was acquired. When that happens, if you've already developed the knowledge, you've already got the mindset that when an opportunity arises, you can act on it, then you're golden and you have an opportunity to generate a $16 million blog post.
Awesome. Second last question. So when you first started espousing about content such as blogs, videos, form of marketing, it wasn't as noisy. Definitely wasn't as noisy. However, the stories in your books and people have changed and, the future books you'll write, they'll have new stories. So people are still going to break through that clutter somehow. And I think a lot of people get quite intimidated. There's so much going on. How do I break through? How do I break through? I guess the question is, what are the characteristics of the people, of the brands who continue to break through the noise and will continue to do so in the future?
I think it's really simple. I think it comes down to the nature of one of the early questions you asked me, which is this concept of understanding the people you're trying to reach, understanding your buyer personas. There is way too much content. There's content overload of people writing about their company and writing about their products and writing about their services. You're not going to break through if you do that. Nobody cares about your company. No one cares about your products. No one cares about your services. Where you can break through, and I think where you will break through, is when you understand the problems faced by the people who might become a customer of yours. You understand the problems of what I call your buyer personas. What are the challenges they face? What are the things that keep them up at night? What are the words and phrases they use to articulate their challenges and their problems? And once you understand that, then you're able to create the kind of content that can break through, because it's not just talking about what your company does, it's solving a problem for the people that you're trying to reach. And it's a fundamentally different approach to it. And I think there's always room, always, always, always room for an organization who can truly understand the people they're trying to reach and create content to reach them accordingly.
Mm. It's just whether it's real time or, you know, getting in front of everyone else.
Yeah.
Final question. So, I mean, I certainly have not been teaching as long as you have. I've only been doing it for about 3 years. But, you know, being as passionate as you are about your craft, also, I don't know if you feel this way, but also means you also get frustrated by certain things in the industry or certain practitioners. So my question is, tell me, as someone who travels well over 150,000 kilometers a year and sees over 10,000, tens of thousands of people every year, what today, you know, looking back at all these years, what today frustrates you about the marketing, what frustrates you about the marketing industry or what practitioners are still doing today after all these years?
I think the thing that frustrates me the most is that there are a lot of marketers out there who are still practicing the art of trickery. They trick companies into working with them, where the companies, you know, the agency partner or whatever it is, the advertising medium, whatever it is, are truly not going to be able to help a company, but they still take that company's money. Excuse me, I'm frustrated when somebody is still talking about old forms of marketing and haven't changed to understand the new landscape, yet they're still selling the things that don't work as so well to potential customers. So I keep coming back to what I've done for the last 15 years and what I've done in the last 10 years with my books is and my speeches is how can I educate people around the possibilities of reaching their potential customers, about generating attention for their business. And everything I do is about that. Everything I do is about how can I make people successful with their business. I don't make as much money as some other marketers. I mean, it may sound weird. The guy who has the number one book and the guy who speaks a lot as much as I do isn't making as much money as others, because I never decided that I wanted to just pull money out of the marketplace. I decided I'm not going to have a team of people and run an agency and just take money from clients. What I decided instead was that I wanted to provide as much education for people as possible to help them grow their business. And so I'm remaining true to that, and that makes it easier for me to sleep at night than if I were just taking advantage of a company and taking their money from them.
Come by that, peace of mind. David Neiman-Scott, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Moby. It's great to be here.
Man, I had so much fun on that interview. David Neiman-Scott, thank you once again for your time. And if you want to see a grown man as excited as a schoolboy meeting his favorite footy player, check out the selfie I took with him in the show notes, redpandas.com.au/EP25, where you'll also find a transcript of the interview if you want to digest that at your own leisure. So what did you think? Did you get any juicy takeaways out of that one? Now, I could go all day with what I took out of it, but I've got two key ones. And the first one is strategies change very little. So Smart Insights found that 50% of marketers don't have a documented strategy. But in reality, I think that data is skewed. I think it's a lot less because I speak to thousands of marketers every year and very few have a strategy documented, personas defined, and a consistent content plan to match. Now, indeed, if you bought David's book back in 2007, the very first one, the very first version, and followed the principles of that, educated yourself, defined your personas, there's very little you could have done wrong. In fact, you'd probably be doing a lot better than most brands out there. Because as David says, most marketing fails because marketers focus too much on their own products and services. That statement sounds weird at first. Well, of course, we're going to focus on our products and services. That's what we do. That's what we sell. And that's okay to a point. But it makes perfect sense when you think about it. Buyers have all the information at their fingertips now. And a marketer's job, and we've said this before in inbound marketing, and this is what the inbound marketing methodology is, a marketer's job is to help a prospect with content at the various stages of their journey, be it at awareness stage when they are aware they have a problem or a desire but don't really know how to solve it yet, or consideration stage where they're evaluating their options, or decision stage where they know what they're looking for, they know their options, and now are looking for the best alternative to make their decision. Most of your content, The majority of your content should not be talking about your products or services. For a particular client of ours, just to give you an idea, we write one piece of content out of the 25, 26 pieces of content, which includes social media posts. One piece of content is about them. One piece. Everything else is designed to inform, educate, and entertain our distinct and defined buyer personas. If you're thinking about this for yourself, my recommendation would be to go back and look at all the content you've done for the last 3 months, if there hasn't been a lot, maybe the last 6 months, and do an audit. How much of it is just talking about you? And if you can go to that next level, define whether you think it's an awareness piece of content, consideration, decision. There's no point just focusing too much on one stage versus the other. You've got to capture everybody at the various decisions of their buyer's journey. It sounds selfless, you know, just to help the user and through their various decision-making processes, not talking about yourself. It sounds selfless. And ironically, it's the most selfless content marketing that turns over the most profit over time, but it requires consistency and long-term commitment. I've seen content kill it in 6 months, but more often than not, this is going to be a sustained commitment. It's more like 12 or 18 months before you're really going to be getting a lot of fruits of that labor that you're punching in there. Now, just quickly, the second and last thing I want to mention is real-time marketing. Last week, we actually spoke about newsjacking, which is a term David Mimenscott pioneered. And in summary, it's the art of injecting your ideas into breaking news stories, which requires you to be engaged in real-time marketing. Now, not to go into it too much, because you can go back to that episode for tips and best practices, but this is clearly an under-leveraged opportunity for brands, probably because most brands are just trying to get the basics right, and rightly so. And you've got to do that. But once you get the basics right and you've defined your strategy, you've identified your personas, it's a very small step to adopt real-time marketing and subsequent newsjacking as a practice. So linking it back to personas and what David Mimenscott said, understand your buyer, that's number one. You create great content that will reach them, number two. Number three, you engage instantly and real time. So it's a succession. You've got to get those basics right before you can do that. The crucial thing here, though, is if you do plan, you can't be too rigid in your planning. We have, for instance, clients who ask us to write a very rigid tactical plan for 12 months. And of course, there's no problem with a 12-month plan. It's something you have to do. You have to be able to allocate resources. But I think the point here is don't be too rigid. To avoid being so rigid, a big recommendation here would be to get pre-approval to do things in real time. Now, to be honest, the financial part isn't the hard bit. That's not the big part. It actually isn't that expensive to do real-time marketing at all. It's getting management approval, particularly in bigger companies, to allow that trust and culture to allow you to push something out there on the web so quickly. The fear, to be frank, like most things in life, is unjustified. Because if you create guidelines like avoiding negative angles, that can quell a lot of fear. And definitely check out last week's episode on newsjacking for more best practice tips and some tools. So that's the end of another masterclass. Thanks once again, David Mimenscott, for all your wise words. If you're on Twitter, please hit up David on @DMScott to follow him or thank him. And I'll link all these details in the show notes for you as well. And check out redpandas.com.au/EP25 for those show notes and the transcript. And you know where to reach me, at Moby Sadiq on Twitter Town or moby@redpandas.com.au. You know, there's countless of case studies of people crushing it with inbound and great content, and there'll be countless more case studies in the future. The question for you is, do you want to be one of them?
Thanks for listening to Inbound Buzz. Learn anything? Return the favor by spreading the word. Want to make your mark in digital? Need help with your digital strategy, inbound, and marketing automation efforts? Then visit redpandas.com.au and be sure to tune in next time for another Inbound Buzz hit.